Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, the show dedicated to discovering the jewels of wisdom that real estate investors are applying to maximize their return on investment. Personally, I am a very intentional student of following trends. I am not an expert, although someday I intend to be. Many great fortunes were made by following trends, sometimes intentionally, often accidentally. Warren Buffett intentionally riding the trends of certain well-selected companies with superior leadership, marketing, and business models to the accidental riding of the trend by the Rockefeller family fortune when the automobile exponentially increased the demand for oil. In every case of trend following, there is one thing in common. The person or company who rode the trend did take intelligent action, which is exactly why you are listening to this podcast right now, correct? So one of the trends I've been watching, hearing about, and contemplating riding myself is the recent trend of the shared economy. Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, and a host of other companies have created and then begun to ride the trend while creating the opportunity and opening up the opportunity for people at many levels. I will not be riding Uber or Lyft, but I may be trying out the Airbnb strategy. To be honest, I am still not 100% sold on the Airbnb trend. I'm not ready to shift my entire business model just yet. However, I am in the process of installing furniture in one of my recent renovations to find out if, in fact, all the hype is factual. There's only one true way to find out. As with riding any trend, you must place capital and time at risk and prove out the assumptions. My business partner and guest today in this endeavor is two-time previous guest, Russell Walker. I'll link to both previous episodes from Russell in the show notes. The titles are Funding Deals Using None of Your Own Cash and his earliest episode, Buying, Fixing, and Wholesaling Houses. Russell and I have been friends for a few years, both closing dozens of deals each month here in the Chicagoland region. Russell jumped into Airbnb after testing it using one of his staged and recently renovated flips. Yes, this house was for sale on the MLS, and he discovered he could produce income while awaiting a retail buyer without being desperate and reducing his price. Did you catch that? No more chasing the market while flipping houses. Even though I know Russell, and I know he's doing Airbnb, and he's even helped me set up and manage my own first initial Airbnb test, I discovered that last little fact about Airbnb being fix and flips while for sale right here live on this episode. That said, right now is a good time to get started. All right, welcome back to the show, Mr. Russell Walker. How are you doing today?
Good, Dan. How you doing, man?
Good. So for everybody's background, Russell had been on the show two separate times. We talked about his power wholesaling career early on. That must have been like 2 years ago, one of my early shows here at the REI Diamond Show. And then maybe, a year ago, Russell, we talked about kind of your transition into flipping properties. And you had this strategy of using multiple sources of credit to allow a lot of people with at least decent credit to get into the game, even if they didn't have a lot of cash. And that was working out well for you. And then that kind of led up to your latest transition, which we're going to talk about today, getting into the Airbnb. So if anyone's interested in checking out Russell's previous stories, we will make a note of those episodes in the show notes. You can check out, the earlier days, and then we could talk about the latest transition here today. So do you want to talk about what led to you discovering the opportunity of Airbnb, Russell?
Yeah, definitely. So we do flip a lot of properties, and we currently have about 29 properties on the MLS that's for sale. And we have about 22 of them that are actually on the vacation rental market. So while they're for sale, they are also cash flowing and making money. So what we what we when I first started out, you know, I didn't know if the Airbnb thing would work. I had about 13 properties on the MLS for sale, and it was probably 13 or 14, and it was probably about a negative $35,000 a month in liability because, you know, we have hard money, we have credit, you know, business credit, we need to pay taxes, utilities, and then I sold a lot of those already, but in a matter of about 2 to 3 months, they went from a negative 35 to a positive 10. So it was about $45,000 more in my pocket every single month due to just one strategy.
That's interesting. I didn't realize when we talked last time, you talked about the strategy of Airbnb, and I thought it was like a switch and then like a long-term hold on these properties you flip. So are you using this exclusively on properties that you're flipping while they're for sale, or are you hanging on to some of them long-term for cash flow, or maybe a combination of both?
What we're doing now is we're looking to get into like commercial. So we're looking to buy commercial buildings. So once the property is becoming vacant, a rental or a rental that a tenant just left, we're fixing it up and putting it on Airbnb, and then we're putting it for sale. So we'll probably put it on the market for like 30 days. And if it doesn't sell, then we'll vacation rental it. And so we're not, you know, we're not taking on that liability every month of paying the mortgage taxes. Someone else is, and we're making money on top of it.
So will you leave that property for sale while you're doing the Airbnb, or do you discard the sale strategy?
Oh, yeah, we leave it for sale. Yeah, if the property's making money, $2,000 to $3,000 positive a month, a lot of these deals, we have $100,000 of equity, $70,000 of equity. So we want to pull that out and get into the commercial space. That is our next strategy that we're going to be doing.
Gotcha. Before we dive into some of the details in the Airbnb, what exactly are you looking for in the commercial space? What kind of deals?
We're looking for, you know, big units, 30 units and up. We don't own any commercial space now, but that's basically, you want to take all our capital that we have invested in all these residential properties and move it into commercial.
Nice. Cool. All right. So let's dive down on one. So the Airbnb is a big trend lately. I've been hearing a lot about the Airbnb strategy, people getting into the Airbnb. I kind of sat out on the sidelines for a while, and I recently, on the heels of your experience, you and I are putting together my first Airbnb, and I'm going to find out if, you know, all the hype and hoopla is what it is. You know, I hear people say, oh, we're making 2,000, we're making 3,000 positive on this Airbnb. And like, I've heard people make, you know, similar claims about rental property and things of that nature. But by the time the real numbers come in at the end of the year on my rental properties, I'm lucky if I break even when I account for the repairs and the vacancies and the evictions and a lot of the evils that come with owning rental property. And so I'm curious to find out if that's going to be the case. And, you know, the stories I hear about the $2,000 to $3,000 are your best case scenario on those Airbnbs, or if in fact it's consistent, reliable, and really is the opportunity that it's made out to be. You know, similar in the sharing economy that we have right now with Uber, Airbnb, I'm sure there's a couple of others, you know, Lyft, similar things. But, you know, the Lyft driver, the Uber driver, it seems like a good deal up front. But maybe when you account for the cost of gas, when you account for the cost of the wear and tear on the vehicle, the repairs and maintenance on the vehicle, plus the time, maybe it's not as great a deal as it would initially seem, but it is better than nothing for the people who are participating in that. So I'm curious to see what my own results are going to be here in the Airbnb to see if I could validate the strategy. But I'm intrigued by your strategy of leaving the property for sale on the MLS, because now it justifies me spending $45,000 to $55,000 in a renovation, and then I can get it staged by a rental staging company where I'm renting the furniture, have them set up and tear down when I'm ready, and I'm paying, I don't know, $400 or $500, whatever it is, a month for the furniture. And then I have the Airbnb thing cooking to potentially offset or even make a profit on my private money or my hard money interest rate payment to the bank on a flip while I'm showing the property to sell the property. So all of a sudden I've monetized an area that was previously just an expense item in my flip, my fix and flip business, sure, to be a profit center. So assuming that's the case, Russell, how are you handling showings on a retail sale when you have this Airbnb thing cooking in the middle? It sounds like it could get to be complex, especially when we have buyers who want to come in, you know, tomorrow at noon, and that's when they can make the showing. Well, maybe you got, you know, Airbnb guests staying there. I mean, how do you handle some of that scheduling and some of that challenge?
Right. So, yeah, that is the challenge when you have it for sale. That's why we typically give it about 4 weeks. If it doesn't sell, then we will start the renting them out. What we do is we first ask them if they can look at the house in between check-in and check-outs, preferably after the house is cleaned by the cleaner. And if they can't, and let's say there's someone in there, we'll just ask the guests, and typically they're fine with it. And most of the time they're not even going to be there, because most of these people are out on vacation. They're touring the city. So we haven't really had any issues with showing the properties. We just, the guests, you know, there have been some guests that would want to be there while someone else is in there, which we understand, but we've always got the buyers inside still. So, and as far as like, maintenance and all that, when you rent the house, typically, you know, 2 years, 3 years, there's, when they check out, when these tenants move out, usually you got to paint the whole house again, refinish the floors again, update the house. With what we're doing, we actually everything has got to be in perfect shape every time someone checks in and out. So if there's something happened to the floors, the carpet got stained or something, we take care of it right away. So it's always in pristine condition. So the property is actually going to have less wear and tear because we're fixing it as every check-in and out goes. And we have to make sure that, you know, there's no problems as far as leaking or anything like that. So that's a good thing, especially with, because if you got a vacant house, it's on the MLS, hasn't been shown in 2 weeks, and there's a leak, you know, which has happened to me before. If we have a vacation rental, we can catch that right away because there's people going in and out, you know, we're fixing stuff right away. So I think it's a great thing for especially the fix and flip, because men, like, you usually like at a break even point, every property of, let's say like 200 grand, for example, and you're trying to sell for 250, and every month you're paying that 2-3 grand hard money loan and paying those taxes and utilities. And every month your break even is going up 2-3 grand. And you're stressed out because it's not selling, so you try to reduce the price, so your profit margin is getting smaller and smaller every single month. Whereas if you do this strategy, actually your break even can go lower. So next month you make 2 grand, your break even is 198, 194. So you're not really stressed anymore about making that payment, and you're not stressed about reducing the price because it's making money. So I've had properties that are on the market 3-4 months. I haven't reduced it once because I'm making 2 or 3 grand positive every single month. And I'm not stressed at all because I know everything's getting paid. You know?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I can definitely relate, as I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show right now can relate to the time bomb pressure of a fix and flip on the market being squeezed from the payment side and the offer price to the market on the MLS side. You're paying more in, that's going up, and your sale price is going down as you're getting more desperate to sell the property. What's the longest right now so far, the record-breaking property for Russell Walker that's sitting on the market, Airbnb-ing, without a price drop, still for sale, active on the MLS?
I started the Airbnb in October, and I still have one from October. So we have November, December. So we haven't dropped the price at all, and I don't really care because it's every month making money.
Do you have a hard money loan that's barreling down, or do you plan on refinancing that property specifically out as a backup plan?
Yeah, we refinance it into the 30 year loan. Yeah.
So, and then it stays for sale. If someone buys it, you take the offer. If someone doesn't buy it, you just keep on Airbnb in it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Nice. We haven't even tried the bedroom thing yet. I have some guys that I've, one of my mentors that got me into Airbnb, he he says the bedrooms are better than the whole house. So I haven't even tried that yet. So that's something that we can try in the future.
All right, cool. Let's dive down on like a single property. We're here in the Chicago market, both Russell and I. Obviously, this can be done in a lot of other markets. It became popular in the Florida coastal markets where we operate at Diamond Equity Investments. I know that in Philadelphia and in some of the hotter areas in Philly, we have an opportunity for this where I know people have done this, and I imagine it's happening in most of the United States as we speak, at least where the population density supports it, just like Uber or Lyft or any of the other shared economy businesses like Airbnb. But anyway, let's dive down into a single unit that you have here in Chicago. You know, what's it take to put the, you know, if I have a house right now that I'm looking to flip, what would be my next steps, Russell, in order for me to do it exactly like you're doing it, where, you know, 30 days has gone by on the MLS, I didn't sell the property. Now, what can I do? The easiest way to get furniture in there? Do I have to provide plates and knives and forks? Do I have to put food in the refrigerator? Do I run into a challenge when I'm trying to sell the property and then settle the thing out where people are complaining that, you know, someone's been living in there? Run me through what we can do on like one deal that I happen to have right now here in Chicago. What are our steps?
Yeah, so there are a ton of Airbnb staging companies out there now. So they'll go ahead and stage it from top to bottom. Everything you can move right in. So there'll be all your kitchen utensils, coffee makers, towels, sheets, beds, air mattresses. We install keypads on the properties. So, you know, we have stagers that we just give them the property, give them the address, and then in about a week or so, sometimes they can get done in a couple of days, everything is completely done and ready to be vacation rented. And so you have to have it where to the point where you can just move in there and stay there for the whole week or 2 weeks without any issues. There's enough toilet paper, paper towels, there's enough shampoo, soap, everything in the house that that you need to live there. We get Wi-Fi access, TV. We don't get cable, but we do get like a TV for fire sticks, so they can watch any show that they want. So yeah, I mean, about the staging company also, I had my mother-in-law is actually the one, she opened a staging company, and she works full-time doing that now. So that's pretty cool.
So you staged the property up, you got it ready to live, and then what? Do I have to get a special license from the city to run, you know, my Airbnb? Is there any permit necessary?
So if you're in Chicago, you do have to go through like an appeals process to get a license. As far as Chicago, we do have an attorney that goes through the appeal process to get the license. It does take a little while, so it may take 3, 4, 5 months to get your license. So as long as you have someone that knows what they're doing to get the license in Chicago, it should be fine. But the suburbs, I haven't had any issues with any of them. Majority of our Airbnbs are actually in the suburbs, not in Chicago.
And in the suburbs don't have the same challenge with the appeal process going on?
There's some suburbs in Chicago you got to watch out for. They do not allow Airbnb, so you have to call the city and make sure they allow it. But then there are suburbs that don't have any laws against it at all, and there's no licensing requirements. There's no appeals process or anything like that. So it depends on the suburb. So you should make sure to call the city and make sure to confirm everything before you put it on Airbnb.
Yeah, and that brings a good point up too. So part of my hesitation with the Airbnb and turning it into like, oh, this is our new main strategy completely across the board would be, you know, the risk that still more and more regulation from more and more localized governments are going to crack down and make it more and more difficult to run Airbnb. As an example, the condo building that I live in here, the board has outlawed Airbnb at all in the entire building. And they basically are, you know, sending communication around on a regular basis to the residents here to blow the whistle if they see, you know, Airbnb type traffic on their floor, in the lobby, the doorman, everybody's kind of on, you know, full alert to make sure that that does not continue to occur. So I imagine that that risk could, you know, grow more and more, which makes the Airbnb while you're selling the property more appealing, because at some point you're able to exit the property and then move on. What else should people know? Is there some other little tips of the trade, tricks that, you know, you're planning on doing for me as my manager here in Chicago on my Airbnb, but that may be someone listening who doesn't have the opportunity, you know, because they're not in Chicago with us here. What are some tips you would give to them for starting, running, and managing and standing up their own Airbnb, Russell?
So there are a lot of buildings in Chicago that also approve the Airbnb. So obviously you got to make sure that if you're in a big apartment or you have a condo, and you got to talk to the HOA, make sure that everything is, you know, okay to do. And in the process of banning Airbnb. So obviously you don't want to get that started. But if there are four or five Airbnbs already in the building, the HOA has approved it and they're okay with everyone doing it, as long as usually they have some rules with it, as long as they don't disturb with loud noises or disturb the neighbors, it's okay. So make sure that everything with your HOA is okay before you do anything. There's a lot of people that have done Airbnb and they don't say anything to anybody and they just put it on there. We don't recommend doing that at all. We recommend talking to HOA, the building, everybody, make sure everyone's aware of what's going on before you do it. And we even tell the neighbors, like once we have an Airbnb, we'll knock on the neighbor's door and say, hey, listen, you know, we're going to vacation rental this home. If there are any issues at all, you know, let me know. We even have neighbors where they help us, you know, mow the lawn. We pay them $100 a month, so they're happy. And then sometimes a neighbor would actually help clean the property once in a while or maintain it. So you want to get your neighbors on your side. You don't want to get them against you. Because we, you know, once you have a neighbor against you, you're going to have a lot of problems. You're going to cause a lot of problems for you.
Cool. So are there any tips with maybe writing the ad or the process for handling the bookings, check-ins, outsourcing any of that? What would be some tips there?
So what we do is we have our company right now. We like I told you, we do our own properties that we own and we're Airbnb-ing them. We do have a few rent-to-owns that we have on Airbnb. We just started where we are going to help other homeowners as far as manage properties, which you're probably going to be our first one that we don't actually have any equitable interest in. So tips there, definitely it's going to be like a hotel. So you don't want to be the one answering all the questions of, you know, how far is, the Airbnb to downtown. And, especially if you get more than two or three Airbnbs, it's going to be a lot of questions going back and forth. So you want to have someone, what we've done is we have out of country assistants that are answering all the questions and taking care of the guests. So any questions that they don't know, they would email us and then they would save that answer. So next time they want to ask me. So in the beginning, you'll probably get maybe bothered a little bit because maybe there's some questions that they don't know. And, maybe we don't know them either, and then we'll ask you, and then we'll save that so we don't ask you that question again. Like, well, some simple questions like, how do you reset the Wi-Fi? Where is the modem? Where is the iron? Or stuff like that, you know? So you definitely want to outsource that part. If you have one or two, I mean, you can manage it yourself, but once you're going to get four or five or more, you got to think of it as you're in the hotel industry, so... you're going to have a lot of guests with a lot of different questions. So, and then we also have companies where you want to make sure the pricing is going to be important. You know, like you want to be competitive. You don't want to be the cheapest property on the market where you're booked 100% because you're going to be putting, leaving a lot of money on the table. So we have a company where they use, algorithms, the same thing hotels use. So they'll price it during the summertime when they know everyone's coming. will be almost the last ones to book, so we'll get the highest price. And then in the winter time, when they know that not too many people are booking, we may be one of the lowest priced homes. So they use an algorithm where you're going to maximize your profit, because they know that, because if one night you can go from usually getting an average of 200, and then one night they know that everyone's booking, you get one night maybe $600 for the night, $700 for the night. We've had like 1 week, 2 days would pay the entire mortgage and taxes and insurance for 2 days that were booked. So you definitely want to make sure that you have some sort of system where you, especially the pricing, because that, for you to go in there and update the calendar manually every single day, that would be way too much work for you to do.
So what company is that that does the algorithm? Is that something you can share, a resource you can hand out?
Yeah, so the company we use is called Beyond Pricing, and then we use them as far as they change the prices every single day.
So they like log in on your behalf, and there's like, so I guess like a bolt-on to your Airbnb account. Is that how it works?
Right. They have access to the account, and they just change the prices daily.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful and pretty important. We have, what was it, Lollapalooza, I think, just came maybe a week or two ago, and I'm sure that the Airbnbs were completely booked up everywhere downtown, and I'm guessing that would be a $500, $600 a night type of event when 5-10 people are going all at once looking to stay in a house. I mean, it makes sense for them, makes sense for you, and hopefully, I guess, the algorithm Beyond Pricing helps you with that, because it would be a nightmare to try to pay attention to every last street festival and event that's taking place, you know, everywhere in whatever city that you're located to try to, it would just drive you crazy, I think, right?
Exactly. Yeah. When I first started, I didn't know anything about outsourcing or anything. So I was the one just manually updating every day. So that was way too much work. You know, you don't want to outsource that for sure.
Yeah, that's huge. Before we switch to like sources of deals, are there any other tips or questions I forgot to answer that would be important? Any other revelations you had management of these Airbnbs that you could share with the listeners?
Well, getting the descriptions and pictures, I mean, you got to make sure that it's staged well. You know, you want to make sure that it's nice looking staging, and then you have the pictures. You want to make sure you have professional pictures, because if you first impression, they're just looking at pictures. So you got to make sure you have the absolutely best pictures that stand out. We use VHT, professional photography company here in Chicago. So we're always using them for pictures. And the staging too is important. You got to make sure you have like nice, you know, bright colors on the sheets, the curtains, make sure that everything's, you know, perfectly clean in the space it needs to be in. And but that's the most important thing, is that when people, you got to look at like your booking as a guest, what's going to attract your eye as far as the competition. If you see a dark room, you're probably not going to click on that one. But if you see a nice open space, bright colors, professional picture, you might click on that one. So you got to stand out from the competition in order to get these bookings, because there's a lot of people on Airbnb that are not professional. They have majority of the listings are just someone that listed their home for sale. I mean, listed their home on Airbnb, and they just took pictures with their iPhone, and then that's it. They didn't stage it. They just took pictures with their iPhone and put it on the market.
Is there a risk of the occupant damaging the property, or any recourse if somebody, you know, floods the place, destroys the place, has a party in the place and completely destroys it? Like, what type of recourse is there, or have you not run into that situation so far?
Yeah, so definitely. We've had a few where they threw a party and they damaged some things. The way we tried to limit that is we try to only book the people that have, maybe have good reviews already. They verified their ID, their phone number, their email. And we try to book the people out of state, not local. As far as locals, we deny most of them because, you know, why would you need to stay somewhere where it's 20 minutes away from your home? To me, that means they want to throw a party. They want to maybe vandalize the home, steal items. We did have a few in the very beginning where, you know, I didn't know any of this, so I booked the locals, and then it did have a party, vandalize the home. We did get the money back from Airbnb, but it did take, I think, about 3 months where we did get all of our stolen items back and damaged the property. But those people were local, and ever since then, we never approve a local. The only time we would approve a local is if they had a ton of good reviews, like let's say 3 or 4 good reviews, and then the reviews are from local people, and they have a good story as far as why they're booking, meaning that maybe they're refinishing their floors, so they can't stay in their house for a week. If they're like, oh, I'm having a bachelor party with my buddies, I'm like, no. So, I mean, if it's like something like that, we automatically deny it up front, yeah. And the VA that are talking to these people are automatically trained to screen for that.
Gotcha. Were you initially taking phone calls and doing everything yourself before you passed this off to the VA? How was that?
I didn't know it was going to work, you know, so I put them on Airbnb and I'm like, oh, let's see if this works. So, yeah, nothing was outsourced. It was all just me doing it in the beginning. And, yeah, I mean, it was a ton of work. Especially, you know, I probably put 2 on the market first, and then within probably 2 days, like a whole month got booked, or every weekend got booked. So then I started putting all the other ones on. But yeah, I started off doing it myself, and then obviously, you know, I found some guys that were already doing a ton of Airbnbs, and I just followed what they were doing and outsourced the majority of the business.
On your initial Airbnbs, did you have like court furniture staging in there, or was that also the staging company that your mother-in-law had built?
No, that was I actually asked the stager if we can Airbnb it, and I just bought the furniture from the stager. So there was already furniture in all the properties, meaning that it was staged. I just had to buy extra beds and all the little things that needed to go in the house. So I just bought all the couches and dining sets and everything. So
cool. All right, let's shift gears and talk about for a few minutes some of the cool sources of deals. So we talked about, and we don't have to go into, you know, we're flipping a house. I'm flipping my 3-unit building. I redid the second floor apartment. That's the unit that we're gonna do here together. But if it's not a rental, if it's not something we own that we're buying intentionally to Airbnb, are there some additional creative sources that maybe, you know, don't take as much capital and commitment to the deal to get one of these started?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if there's a lot of ways you can just control the property as far as not owning it, you can do a rent to own. You can do just a straight rental. I wouldn't necessarily do something where it's like month to month, because if you're making money, you can cancel it. You know, the landlord would be able to cancel it in 30 days. I would try something where we would get like a 5-year lease or a 5-year rent to own, 3-year rent to own. And what's powerful is that if you do get a rent to own, it's basically the same thing as ownership, because you have you lock in the equity as far as the purchase price, and then you lock in the cash flow as far as what you agree on the monthly rent. And if you do rent to own, you could also sell the property. So, I mean, pretty much, you know, you get, if you do own a property, what can you do? You can sell it, you can rent it, you can rent to own it, you can vacation rental it. If you get a rent to own and the owner agrees, so we're upfront with the owners, you know, we tell them exactly what we're doing. Then we're going to do short-term rentals. We're going to, you know, put it on Airbnb, put it here. So if the owner agrees and make sure that in the contract, it's all in writing, Once you do have a rent to own, you can have it signed. Once you have it signed, you can sell that property. You can rent it normally if you want. I wouldn't recommend that. You can rent to own it again, or you can vacation rental it. So we have picked up a few rent to owns where we invest 10 grand and first month rent, security deposit, furniture costs, and making 2-3 grand positive a month or more on some months. So, yeah, so if you don't have a, you know, investment, or you don't have 50, 60 grand to own a house, get a mortgage, rehab it and put it on Airbnb, then there are creative ways where you can negotiate the lease and negotiate the a rent to own where the investment is very minimal and you can still cash flow the property.
That is pretty cool. So your business has changed slightly. I mean, talk about, you did mention that you wanted to go to the commercial and get some of the larger units. Are you planning on doing like Airbnb in a 30 unit building with those commercial properties, or would they be like straight commercial?
Well, I'm sure the city won't allow you to do the whole building, but you can probably get away with maybe doing 30% of the building or half of the building. It depends on what the city allows. But yeah, if we go into a city where they say, you know, you can Airbnb the entire building, now it's like a hotel, right? So if they allow it, I would do it, yeah. But I haven't looked at that as far as, yeah, as far as being able to Airbnb an entire 30 unit building. Because at that point, it's pretty much a hotel, you know.
Yeah, true enough. So going forward, 2018, market is where it is right now. What's your plan? Obviously, you're going to continue wholesaling, low risk. We didn't touch on that much today, but, you know, that's a big part of your business. Can you talk about going forward? I mean, are you still looking to get into more fix and flips? Is it going to be primarily Airbnb? Would you even still consider going for some rentals? And of course, we mentioned the commercial thing, but what's the vision for the next year or two look like for you?
So our vision is to sell a lot of the property that we already own, do what we're doing now. Once the property becomes vacant, we have another one coming vacant in a couple of weeks. We'll pretty much stage it, put it on the MLS for sale. If it doesn't sell in a few weeks, we'll put it on the Airbnb market. And then, you know, cash out on all the equity that we have. So we have rentals where we still bought from 2008, 2009, 10 that have appreciated pretty well. And take that cash and, like I said, put it into the commercial market. And also grow the portfolio of rent to owns as well, as far as not just Chicago, but different markets around the United States and around the world as well. Because if you can invest, you know, your investment's 10 grand and you can pick up a rental in San Diego, for example, and make 2-3 grand a month. You know, I don't know many investments that can beat that type of return, you know, like if you can control it for the next 4 years, 5 years.
So it sounds like the Airbnb will be a big part of the strategy going forward then, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Cool. All right. I got a couple pages of notes in the Airbnb. Hey, Russell, do you have any other personal habits, strategies, or life hacks outside of real estate specific that help you build, contribute to your success, and stay focused?
Yeah, I mean, I think most investors or most successful investors I know have some type of rituals they do every morning. I just had a meeting a few weeks ago, or a couple of days ago, that I taught them all this, and everyone was like blown away. I teach, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you need to put yourself in a mindset of, we call it the peak state. What I actually do is I listen to my favorite music, that high energy music, and I jump up and down like a madman, and I scream and yell for like 2-3 minutes just to get my whole body alert and awake. And then I get into a state of mind, we call it a beautiful state, where I meditate about, you know, 3, 4, 5 things I'm grateful for. And every day it's 3 or 4 or 5 things every day. And then I meditate about, if I achieved all my goals, where would I be? What would I be doing? How would I feel? So I meditate about 3 or 4 different goals that I achieved, and I put myself in that state that I'm actually there, that it happened. Even when you're meditating about being grateful too, I meditate about 3 or 4 different moments that happened in my life that I'm grateful and happy for. So this is the first, 20 minutes that I'm awake. I do this every single morning. And I always start, if you get into this state of your whole body is alert, awake, alive, and you're in that state of mind where you appreciate, you love everything, you're in a grateful state of mind, then you can start. What I do is I do a quick workout for like 30 minutes. So I have my mental health, my spiritual health, and my physical health are taken care of within the first hour of being awake. And then I get into business. Then I start open my laptop and start calling people back and doing emails. So if you always put yourself in that type of state of mind, business is easier. You'll get creative ideals easier. You'll attract more people to you as far as money and partners and all that. So because if you wake up, roll out of bed, and you're thinking about everything you're worried about, and then you start working, it's going to be hard to succeed in this business. You're going to detract people away from you. People are not going to want to partner with you or lend you money, because the people that are successful are like a magnet. They attract money, they attract partner, they attract business. So I always teach people that I'm coaching, mentoring, that you need to put yourself in this state of mind at all times throughout the day, not just the morning. If you get into a funk 3, 4, 5 hours later, go ahead and do that. Get in the peak state, get into a beautiful state of mind, and then go back to work. Take 20 minutes off, go back to work, and then respond to that contractor that's asking you for 10 grand more and you're pissed, that way you're not burning relationships, you're not destroying things,
Cool. You have any book recommendations recently that came across your desk?
Yeah, I've been studying a lot of Tony Robbins stuff. Waking the Giant Within was an awesome book. And then mainly, I haven't been reading too many books. Mainly I buy courses and listen to them, But yeah, I do recommend getting Tony Robbins' book, Awaken the Giant Within. It's a life-changing book.
Cool. Any courses you'd recommend that people should check out?
Yeah, I buy pretty much a course every single month. So, I got the most recent one I bought was BnBformula.com. That'll help you get through the Airbnb stuff.
Nice. That's pertinent. So, Russell, if you could go back and share with yourself back in, let's say, 2008 when you first got into business, the crown jewel of wisdom, what would that be, knowing what you know now?
I mean, most important thing is that I see, because I coach a lot of people, the most important thing that I see is mainly because all the technical details are out there, like how to wholesale a deal, it's simple. How to do a rent to own is simple. How to do Airbnb is simple. The most important thing is your mindset. So, like what I talked about a little bit earlier, if you can change the way you think every day and how you feel every day, that's the most important thing is to be, in my opinion, to be successful in this business. Because a lot of guys get into the business, they get really excited, they join, and then they think they're gonna make a ton of money, but when an obstacle hits, they quit because their mindset is not there. They have the mindset, I'm gonna try this out, and if it works, great. If not, then I'm gonna move on to something else. Most people are dabblers. They dabble here and there, and then they move on to something else. So if you get into the mindset of for example, this business that we're doing obviously works. I mean, you're successful at it. We know it works. And if you're 100% convinced it works, and you never, if you're 100% convinced it works, you're never going to give up. And that's the key, is never give up. And the only way to get to that point where you're never going to give up is that you have to have that mindset of attracting business, mindset of appreciation, grateful for everything in your life. And, most people that don't have that type of mindset, I don't think they succeed in this business.
True enough. I think it's part of the challenge too. What you're getting at is like, it's a little bit of a slow business. You know, I think for me, I sold cars before I got into the real estate business, and I'd sell a car that day and I'd get paid on like Friday. You know, if it was Monday, Tuesday, whatever, I'd get paid relatively quickly. So the results from my effort would come relatively quick. And I think a lot of people, when they get into the real estate business, are used to the results coming quick. They've had jobs where they, you know, put in 5 days, 6 days worth of work. And then if it's not that Friday, it's the following Friday that they settle up and they get the monetary result, their paycheck for that effort. And with real estate, especially in the beginning, it took me 6 months to get the knowledge, start taking action, keep taking action, you know, take a bunch of action that failed and work on deals that never closed until I finally got to the place where, you know, I had these 6 crucial hours where I worked on this deal and made $6,000. So, you know, taken as a snapshot by itself, the 6 hours that turned into $6,000 sounds like all the money in the world. But, you know, the tale of the 5 months that led up to that, you know, is where the real work was. So I think it's the stick-to-itiveness, that patience and ability to keep working on something and build something for the long term that people have a challenge with. Cool. Russell, would you like to share some contact information, a website, anywhere people can go to get some more information about you?
Yeah. If you're looking for wholesale deals in Chicago, our website is Best, B-E-S-T, Chicago, wholesaledeals.com. We do provide funding for our investors too. So if you're looking for funding, you're in the Chicago market, we have a website, it's fundingforrehabs.com. And then we also have monthly meetup groups. We have them twice a month now. And we hold one in North Side Chicago, in Rosemont, and one every month in the South Side, South Suburbs of Chicago and Midlothian. If you're interested in going to one of our meetups, you can go to our website at bestchicagoreimeetup.com. Sign up there and we'll email you over all the details of the next meetup. And we have one every 2 weeks. And then my contact info, my phone is 773-231-7405. You can reach me on my email as well, Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, at chicagomutualrealestate.com.
All right. Russell, I know you're super busy. I can hear the text alerts going off and the emails. I'm sure you got a ton of stuff to do. I really appreciate you taking this hour to share with us about the Airbnb strategy. A lot of cool stuff here. Really opened my eyes to some opportunity to better flip the properties I'm flipping, amongst some other stuff. So thank you. I really appreciate you and appreciate you coming on the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate it, man.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. If you're interested in a pre-release of the next episode, before the email goes out, please subscribe on YouTube or one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. If you'd like to get in touch with me, say hello, maybe come on the show, etc., you can contact me by clicking on the Contact Dan link at reidiamonds.com. At that site, you can also check out profitable real estate deals and the entire archive of the REI Diamond Show, totaling more than 113 episodes. Accredited investors are already earning double-digit returns passively in real estate. Are you? You can sign up to receive private mortgage investment opportunities via email by going to superchargedreturns.com. I am always buying houses, and I am always looking for deals. We don't just wholesale. We do fix and flip, and we hold rentals here at Diamond Equity Investments. So if you have a fix and flip deal available right now, send me the details by email or using the contact link at reidiamonds.com. That is limited to the markets I am operating, which is Chicago, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Miami, and Tampa. I do personally monitor that contact form and the email account. Thanks again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I will catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.